Welcome to the Financial Flight Plan with Tim Estes and Bree Reyes. When it comes to your financial future, we believe the sky is the limit. We'll give you the proper tools to keep your engine portfolio running smoothly. Let us pilot the answers to some of your toughest financial issues. The Financial Flight Plan starts now.
Rocking and rolling on another podcast, it's the Financial Flight Plan. Walter Storholt here alongside Bree Reyes of Estes Financial Services, serving you throughout the Metroplex with an office in Fort Worth. You can find the team online at estesfinancial.net, as well as on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And Bree, great to be chatting with you once again today. And I'm going to see if I can get Bree to sing on the podcast today. What do you think, Bree?
Walter, no. We like our listeners. We don't want to make them go through that.
She just will not do it. I tried to talk her into it before the show today, but she just doesn't want to go there. I am one for singing in private all day long. But in public, yeah, it's a little tough to get me to take that next step as well, Bree. On the podcast today, okay, I'm going to swallow my pride. I'm going to try it. We're going to talk about the fact that you've lost that financial feeling. There we go. We got it right that time. Okay, that's it. I'm stopping right there. Swallowed the pride, Bree. No, seriously, this is inspired by the song, You've Lost That Loving Feeling. But believe it or not, financial planning isn't all about math and logic. There are times when it's important to factor in how you feel about certain things. So we want to cover some of the times when it's okay to let your emotions and feelings enter the financial equation. And before we get into the specifics here, Bree, I mean, is that right? Is it okay for emotions to be part of this process?
Emotions have to be part of this process, Walt. We're not data from Star Trek. I mean, we all have them. And it's important to acknowledge them and feel them and figure out how they're impacting your decisions. I mean, we all have emotions regarding everything, whether we acknowledge them or not. You know, I've got the name of a good therapist if you need that. But when it comes to investing, there's an entire psychology of behavioral finance, thinking about how people's emotions affect their investing decisions. And it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, but it is funny because we've heard for years and years and years, quit making emotional decisions. You've got to make fact-based choices and things like that. But we're going to kind of be counter to that and say, no, it's okay to consider your emotions on a few of these items. So a couple of examples for you on the podcast today. One great question to ask yourself is, how much do you care about where you live? Would you be happier staying in your home where perhaps you've raised a family? Or would you be just as happy in a different home and possibly even a different community? A lot of people kind of evaluate that question as they get towards and into retirement.
Well, and nowadays our families are living so spread apart. We had a client of ours call the other day and we were talking about it, and the kids are living on opposite coasts. And they were trying to decide, you know, do they want to live in Texas? Do they want to live on a coast near one kid? What about the other kid and the other kid's family? So, yeah, it's a decision you've got to think about and factor in and weigh in. And, you know, do you like the upkeep of your home? Do you like the stairs? Do you think 10 years from now you're still going to want to do the stairs? It all kind of weighs in. You know, are you comfortable with your community? We had Tim's dad, my grandfather, Austin Estes, lived in Houston. And Grandpa, as much as we wanted him to move up here and to be closer to us, was not going to leave his church community and the USO and his relationships in Cyprus. He just wasn't going to leave Cyprus. And so we had to, as much as we wanted him to be here, understand that a lot of that was an emotional decision. I mean, that's where my grandmother was buried, and that was their home, and that's where he felt the most comfortable. His church family was a huge part of his life. And even though, yes, it kind of disappointed us that we didn't get to see him as much as we wanted to, we had to respect his wishes.
Yeah, it's a great point. And now, this is not to ignore that there's still a financial component to that decision, right?
Oh, very much so. I mean, the financial component of, you know, could Grandpa have maintained the house that he and Grandma had after she was gone? No, we ended up selling that house just because it was too much financially and, quite frankly, too much to clean. Let's be honest here.
huge part of the equation, right?
Grandpa was a piler. Yeah, I mean, he piled left and right Grandma coming behind him. Yeah, no, that wasn't working. So it's something to think about. It's something to think about whether you want to retire to, you know, retiring to the Bay Area cost-wise, and what that will do to your overall financial picture is a lot different than retiring to Fort Worth, Texas. Just the cost of living alone, the cost of gas, everything, taxes, all of that stuff has to be factored into the equation. So as much as I am, and I am kind of the touchier, feelier one around here, as much as I do acknowledge the feelings that you've got, we've got to work through those feelings and how they're affecting your financial decisions and making sure that you're not allowing your emotions to completely control you and make bad financial decisions because of emotions. I've seen that before too.
Yeah, really important. And that home conversation, certainly one great example where emotions are okay and in fact encouraged to enter the equation. What about leaving a financial legacy? I know that that's something that a lot of people feel differently about. Some want to do it. Some don't feel that passionate about it. Others take that whatever's left approach. But evaluating if that's really important to you or not, taking that emotional conversation will help you make the financial plan.
And I know we're going to talk a lot about finances here, but you've got to think about your financial legacy as a part of your entire legacy. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot lately with my husband's grandparents. He is lucky enough to still have living grandparents. I unfortunately am not. All my grandparents have passed. And with our son. And, you know, the legacy that I want my son to grow up knowing, not only Lilo and Chewy, not only Jay's grandparents, but also to know about Grandpa Estes and Grandma Estes and my other grandparents. And it's a really hard thing to weigh as a parent. And I didn't realize this until Nate was born, but you want to be able to leave your kids, you know, a helping hand, but not necessarily turn them into where they don't understand the value of a dollar or where they are cavalier about all the hard work that you've gone through.
That's a good
and
word,
your sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard. I mean, I think about the fact that, and I'm using Grandpa Estes a lot in this podcast, but Grandpa was a house painter in Houston, outdoors, in the heat, in the humidity. Ugh, sorry, I don't do humid well. I've got curly hair. It's not a pretty thing.
Hey, I'm in North Carolina. We're right there with you Texans. Humidity is no fun.
But I mean, I think about all the sacrifices Grandpa made so that Dad could go to A&M and join the Navy and protect our country. And I want to make sure that Nate understands those sacrifices and the financial sacrifices that have been made by the generations before him so that he will be put in a position where he can make really neat life choices.
I think it's pretty neat that you have that perspective, and it's certainly a really important part of the conversation. So you really should let your feelings be part of your guide when you're putting together your financial plan. Here's something else that's, I think, really important, Bree. It's when it comes to how you feel about your actual plan. Do you like getting into the details and the nitty-gritty of your investments? Do you really like, you know, understanding and learning about PE ratios and, you know, those sort of things? Or do you prefer simplicity and the ability to devote as little thought to your finances as possible? The folks that come in and say, just tell me what to do. Which end of the spectrum are you on? Are you on somewhere in the middle? That's an emotional conversation.
That's very much an emotional conversation. Some people cannot give over control of their financial lives. It's a scary, scary thing, especially as you get close to retirement, because you know how to accumulate money. You know what it's like to have a paycheck coming in. But the idea of, okay, that paycheck is going to stop. And for most people, I mean, there's some of us that are municipal employees that are lucky enough to have pensions. But for the average American worker, the pension doesn't exist anymore. So now it's, okay, I have this, as Tim calls it, 800-pound gorilla, you know, that I have to turn into money, an income stream. I mean, it is money, but I have to turn it into an income stream. And that is scary. And I think the people that try to avoid that conversation and just say, oh, it's easy and investing is easy and, you know, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Well, granted, the way at least our firm puts portfolios together is very analytical. It's based in academia. It's very boring. It's very dry. There's not a lot of emotions in it. But what we have to deal with is the emotions of the investor, understanding that that's a terribly scary thing. And trusting someone, especially with some of the headlines that have been out in the last 10 years, is terrifying. And that's why I always suggest, you know, whether you work with us here at Estes Financial or somewhere else, make sure you're doing due diligence. Make sure you're working with people that are certified financial planners, that have a fiduciary standard, that talk to you about that and talk to you about your emotions, because otherwise, it's hard. It's a really, really hard thing, and it's really, really scary.
Yeah, really interesting conversation, I think, when it comes to just how you view your investments, because everyone's going to be somewhere different on that spectrum of how involved they want to be, and can make a big difference in your relationship with the advisor. You know, can they meet that need? Can they educate you to the level that you want to be educated? Or do they know that, hey, you're a hands-off kind of person, and do they respect that and develop that trust between one another? All of those are really important things to discuss. Another question to ask yourself as we talk about feelings and emotions entering the financial equation: do you feel better if you're completely debt-free, or are you comfortable with the idea of always carrying some debt? That'll have some implications on how you structure a plan.
That does. That has huge implications on how you structure a plan. And we talk about arbitrage here in the office and the importance of good debt versus bad debt. And have you saved enough to be completely debt-free and maintain the standard of lifestyle that you're living? I am of the mind that most people, especially with more and more of these studies I'm reading, we haven't saved enough to live completely debt-free for the rest of our lives. And swallowing that idea, swallowing that pill, is really, really hard. Because that's what we want to do. We want to do that. But I've seen too many cases of people becoming house rich and investment poor. And then you have a house, which, you know, you paid off because you wanted to be debt free. And don't get me wrong, it's a beautiful and amazing and wonderful home. And I get that. I get being emotionally attached to your home. I'm kind of emotionally attached to my home right now. But I can't take a brick out of my house to pay my electric bill.
Yeah.
You know, Charter Communications is not going to accept a chunk of concrete for my internet, you know, service for the month. That's not how it's working. And I think more and more people rush to pay off their home and then are now figuring out, oh my goodness, we've over the long term put ourselves in a bad situation. So is all debt bad? Not necessarily. And it's definitely not a black or white situation. It's something to talk through. And it's something about whether you're comfortable with it. You know, with carrying debt, are you comfortable with that? I mean, reverse mortgages are an industry because people rush to be debt free and then realize that, wait, I need an income stream. Would they have been better maybe had they kept the debt and structured their investments for an income stream? I don't know, but I do know that if you stay up late at night because you've got a teething toddler, you see a lot of commercials for reverse mortgages.
Yeah, there are a lot out there. But I think you bring up some good points about debt. And then just, again, it's this whole conversation of what's important to you, what's going to work with the rest of your financial plan. Just a personal story here. Obviously, I'm not near retirement age, but just on that housing situation, you know, I talked to you, Bree, about I just moved into a new home and we sold our old home. So it's kind of exciting as we're kind of upgrading to a little bit bigger space, getting ready for starting a family here in the next couple of years. And it was really interesting because in our previous home, we had it for 6 years, almost to the day, really, when it sold. We had it for 6 years and we really poured as much money as we could into the mortgage. So we were overpaying on the mortgage every single month, huge amounts. Every time, you know, there was a bonus or we had a little extra income come through, we just threw it right at the house on the principal payment. And I think that was born out of because I had bought my home in 2012, I guess. Was that 6 years? 2018? Yeah, 2012. So it was right after seeing so many stories of people losing their homes because they went upside down in their mortgage. And I was like, gosh, I don't want that to happen to me. So we tried to build equity as fast as possible in the home. Now, it kind of bit us a little bit because, well, now we went to go buy a new home and we were like, well, we don't have like any cash. We've put all of it into the home. It's either in retirement planning or in the home. We don't have any short-term decent amount of savings for a down payment. So now we're contingent on selling the home to be able to purchase a new home, which in this market was going to be incredibly difficult to do. And also, my wife's in grad school. We've got two dogs. The thought of selling the home first and then not finding the right home and having to move into an apartment and, you know, temporary.
An apartment that takes dogs. No, no. Yeah.
It was crazy. And so we were very fortunate that we were able to utilize a home equity line of credit for the down payment and bought the new home first, then turned around and sold the old home. And it ended up working out absolutely beautiful. But we had to take some risk in doing that. And I wouldn't have done it if I didn't feel pretty confident that our home would sell quickly. But we had to take some risk in doing it. It limited kind of our options, as you can see. And it's possible that that wouldn't have been an option to us had things, you know, been a little bit different. It just happened to work out this time. But it's got me thinking differently in this new home about how much do we want to overpay? How much of a priority is that rather than buffering savings in other ways?
You took a gamble, my friend, and you lucked out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. With the HELOC, you mean?
No, I just mean by overpaying.
Exactly.
And then you managed to make it all work out. But I can tell you that you are lucky. The stars do not always line up that way. And I would encourage you to think about that, but also look at how much you're putting away, A, for retirement, and B, a side slush fund for an emergencies, and C, what else do you have on the horizon?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You and I talked before the show a little bit about kiddos. Let me tell you, those things are expensive.
Yep. So quit paying the extra on the home at this point and get ready for those kids, right?
I'm just saying, you know, you may want to start thinking about things.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there's advice that, you know, the one extra payment per year can accelerate you paying off the house a pretty good amount, right? I think that's probably pretty good financial advice. But to truly be pouring in lots of money into paying extra, or what's the decision that retirees face a lot is just, hey, I've got this chunk of cash. Should I just wipe out the rest of the mortgage or not? That's probably the more realistic.
That's the more realistic one. You and I, the extra payment per year, yeah, probably doesn't bother us all that much. What I see regularly and what terrifies me is the, I'm about to retire. I have XYZ amount in my 401k. I'm going to take it out and pay off my home so that way my monthly debts are lower. But what have I done? You've taken your 800-pound gorilla that's supposed to keep you safe and warm and fight inflation and fight taxes and last you the rest of your life, and you've made it a 600-pound gorilla, or God forbid, a 400-pound gorilla. It's harder to make the 400-pound gorilla behave like an 800-pound gorilla. It's just not as intimidating and doesn't work the same way.
Any gorilla is bad.
Well, any gorilla. If it's in the room, I tend to think of them as good. They're to protect you. But, you know, bigger is better. When it's a protection animal, bigger is sometimes better. And so you've got to feed your gorilla.
Whenever I think gorilla, I think the movie Congo. So I've always just kind of got this, you know, negative impression of gorillas wanting to pound me into the sand. But
oh no, they're sweet, wonderful animals. I love them.
No, they are good. They are. All right. One more question that you should ask yourself if you're thinking about, is it okay to let my emotions enter the equation here? And that's when it comes to the stock market. How does market volatility bother you? Do you feel stress when the market is turbulent? Is it disruptive to your life when we have days like we did just recently as we record this podcast today, where the market took a huge tumble? Does it make you pull your hair out and go crazy? If it does those things to you, that's telling you something, and you can structure your plan to help counteract that.
Exactly. I mean, if market volatility is bothering you, first of all, take a look at, is it the talking heads on TV that are bothering you, or is it your actual portfolio? Is the volatility in your portfolio bothering you, or just the news and the world around you? Because I know for me, if I pay a little too much attention to the talking heads, the headlines, that type of thing, that can bother me more than if I see, okay, my portfolio is down a little bit. And make sure you understand that. And then we've got to look at your risk tolerance in your portfolio. Does your risk tolerance match what you're actually comfortable with? It's funny because we're going through a volatile period of the markets right now, the U.S. markets, which that's another thing. The U.S. markets do not reflect the global markets as a whole, nor does the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Is not a perfect reflection of everybody's portfolio. Please remember that when you watch the news. Because they love to focus on the Dow. But are you invested in the Dow Jones Industrial Average is a good question to ask yourself every time they start talking about it. Because, first of all, not a lot of people know. Second of all, not a lot of people know how much of their portfolio that the Dow makes up. And then third, it's scary. I get that. And especially with today's 24-hour news cycle, like doom and gloom leads. If it bleeds, it leads. That's just kind of how journalism works. And so you've got to understand what you're comfortable with. And, you know, if the portfolio that you're in is more volatile than you're comfortable with, then we need to talk. You need to let us know, because it's really easy to get comfortable with volatility when your portfolio is going up. It's a lot harder to be comfortable with volatility when your portfolio is maybe down a little bit or flat. But there's some safeguards in place in our portfolios. I mean, at least the ones that we use here at Estes Financial Services that are so diversified that when one sector of the market may be doing well and another sector maybe not so well, they kind of balance each other out. And that's part of the reason we believe so heavily in diversification. And I get complaints all the time about, well, you know, XYZ sector is doing great. Why isn't my portfolio up as much as XYZ sector? Well, yes, you have XYZ sector in your portfolio, but you also have ABCD sector. You have JKL sector. We've got a lot of other stuff in there. And why do we have it? Because when XYZ doesn't do well, hopefully ABCD does. So you've got to really understand your portfolio and don't be ashamed of telling your investor coach, telling Tim and I or whoever you're working with, hey, I'm not comfortable with this. Will you explain it to me? And if they can't explain it to you, you need to find a new financial advisor.
It's a great comment and I think worthwhile to consider. I mean, are you talking about emotions in meeting number one? I mean, as soon as somebody comes into the office, it's immediately part of the conversation?
We talk about them really all throughout our meetings and kind of touch on them even more. As people join our Estes Financial Services family, we're talking about emotions a lot more lately, just because it's kind of become a realization to Tim and I both that people need it. Money is something that nobody likes to talk about necessarily, but they need to. Either between spouses or sometimes on their own or sometimes just to ask questions. And I want to make our industry one where you feel comfortable asking the question. I mean, that's what we love about being coaches is we love coaching our clients. We love talking them through things and helping them understand and making sure they feel like they are gaining a financial education as well. That's the reason we've put together the Financial Flight Academy, where every month we're sending out, or pardon me, it's every other month, we're sending out a video course with a workbook to talk about different financial topics, because it's easy to forget, even if you've heard it once from us before, it's easier to go home and forget. And B, it's sometimes scary to raise your hand and say, I don't understand this. I know when I'm in a topic, you know, a doctor's office or whatever, where I'm something that I'm not very knowledgeable, I always kind of is this a stupid question? Should I even ask this question? This is a dumb question. And then I go home and then I get on Google and then I Google my question and then I think I'm dying. And so we want to make it where people are comfortable, where they ask the questions, the big, bad, scary questions, because I don't want you leaving our office worried about something when we could have helped you. And I sure as heck don't want you to get back on the interwebs and then think worst case scenario, because that might not be you.
Might not be you, might not be the best course of action to take. That's why it's good to get that guidance from somebody who's been there, done that, has seen other people go through what you're going through and has helped them through that path before. And like we've said on the podcast before, learning from others' mistakes so that you don't have to experience them, it's a real benefit to be able to tap into that power. If you want to get in touch with Bree Reyes and the team at Estes Financial Services, there's a couple of easy ways to do it. You can find out about some of those, you know, opportunities where you can learn a little bit more, get some better financial education, or come into the office, have that conversation about your financial plan. You can set up a time to meet by calling 817-444-8402. That's 817-444-8402, and come and hang out in the office there in Fort Worth. You can also go online to estesfinancial.net. That is estesfinancial.net, or look up the team online, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. They're in all three of those locations as well, with lots of great information put out all the time on those resources. Bree, that'll wrap things up for this edition of the podcast. Thanks so much for taking the time out, giving us some of your thoughts on, I think, this great topic, making sure that our emotional feelings can line up with our financial feelings so that we can build the best financial plan possible. Truly instrumental, I think, in having the proper financial plan. And we'll look forward to another conversation with you again soon.
Yes, please. And if you have any questions, please, please, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. I know that this can be a scary topic. I understand finances and the market. I mean, it can be terrifying. So please reach out to Tim and I and don't hesitate to shoot us an email or a Facebook message or whatever. And just let us know that, you know, you've got some questions. Give us a call. We're always here. And in the meantime, go out and lead an abundant life.